Real people. Real opinions. Real talk radio. The multi-award-winning Niall Boylan Show. Classic hits.
Should the number of abortions be reported on? Because there is rula-boola going on online at the moment, on Facebook pages and all over the place, because new figures show that a total of 6,666, quite an ironic figure actually, even if I am an atheist, 6,666 abortions were carried out here last year under the new legislation, legalising the termination of pregnancy in some cases. The vast majority of abortions, 6,542, were carried out on early pregnancies of less than 12 weeks, according to the report on the first year of legislation laid down by the House of the Oireachtas. Some 21 terminations were carried out under the legislation's risk to life or health category, while three took place because there was a risk to the life and health and in an emergency. And by the way, they probably happened anyway long before we had legislation. 100 abortions were performed because there was a condition likely to lead to the death of the fetus, in other words, a fatal fetal abnormality. And Dublin accounted for 2,493 terminations, according to the Women's Home Address, and Cork for 606. Terminations were carried out in all 26 counties of the Republic, with Leitrim recording the lowest figure of 27. Some 67 terminations were carried out on women giving an address in Northern Ireland, and the Law and Health Regulations of Terminations of Pregnancy Act 2018 came into effect December 2018. According to the 2019 abortion statistics for England and Wales, there were 2,135 abortions to women recorded as residing outside England and Wales in 2019, which was a decrease from 4,687 in 2018. So it does seem that, you know, on top of the 6,666 between Northern Ireland and the Republic of Ireland 2019, there were 2,135, which is a massive decrease because, of course, they don't have to go to England and Wales anymore. So that you can add that on top of the 666. Well, not all of them, obviously, because some of them would have been from Northern Ireland as well, and possibly Scotland too. But if we take it, for example, that in 2016, there were 3,200 abortions, roughly, in Ireland. And during the referendum, we were told by people that there would be no increase, that people said there probably wouldn't be an increase. But there was. It seems we have doubled the figure. Abortion in Northern Ireland was decriminalised after a free vote by Westminster MPs in July 2019. The then suspended Northern Ireland executive did not return by October 21st, 2019, meaning the amendment would introduced by Labour MP Stella Creasy was passed into law the following day. Of course, you can blame Sinn Féin and the DUP for that. Tonight, I want to talk about the reporting of these figures. Some people are not happy. One person said online, are they going to report on the number of operations that are taking place each day, the number of medical procedures taking place each day, or is it just that they want to shame women who had abortions? I fear it is the latter. It is sad that even after this country passed the law to allow women to make a choice, we are still shaming them by announcing how many happened in 1 year. So people are not too happy about it. Whereas other people believe that it's a matter of fact and we're trying to have that information. But what do you think of the message? Should the number of abortions be reported on? And do you think it's to shame people? I don't believe that's the case. I believe it's just a matter of having statistics. Should the number of abortions be reported on each year? Or should it be something that should be private? As some people have said online, this is the personal business of those women involved. And it shouldn't be a matter of public record. Let me know what you think. But they don't, mind you, they don't give out their names or anything like that. It's just a number. They don't go, you know, Mary from Dublin or something like that. You know, it's just a number. Just telling us how many happened. I mean, for example, I can look up for the last 20 years or 30 years in the UK and see how many abortions there were and the reasons for those abortions. We keep statistics. You know, you can go and look it up. It just so happens that newspapers printed it today because it was the first year it happened. I don't see what the big deal and what everybody's getting all fussed about. But however, some people are fussed about it. So should the number of abortions be reported on? Let me know what you think. The number is 087-188-0008. That's 087-188-0008. Maeve, you are a pro-life spokesperson. I just want to make that clear to people. So obviously, you obviously have your own side of the argument.
Yes, I am.
And we're used to listening to you as well. So welcome back to the show. It's been a little while, of course, because we haven't spoken about abortion in a while.
Yeah, and I've been busy with work, so I haven't been on for a while, but good to talk to you again.
You too. Okay, in relation to the, you know, the hula-boola that's going on today, people giving out that they shouldn't be printing these numbers, that we're trying to shame women, and we had it's an ironic number, by the way, 6,666. When I heard that on the news today, I said, I'm not even religious, and I feel there's something in that, if it's not a sign. But anyway, do you think these numbers should be reported?
Well, to be honest, I'm kind of surprised that when we hear about 6,666 abortions happening in Ireland in the first year, which is an increase by any estimate.
By the way, it is more than that. It is more than that.
It is more than
that. Because you have to include those who travelled as well.
Yeah. But these are the ones from Ireland. But I just find it so strange that the discussion online is apparently about should we report these numbers or not, rather than actually looking and saying, that's 7,000 babies whose lives were ended in abortion, and 7,000 mothers who felt they had no other choice, and 7,000 fathers who never got to meet their babies. So there are lives involved here. And I think, you know, it does relate to women's personal lives, but it relates to the life of the life of the child, the mother, the father. And in many of these cases, these are women who didn't want an abortion, but they felt they had no other choice. They didn't feel they were being offered support. And I think to just gloss over those numbers and say we shouldn't talk about it.
When you say they didn't feel like they were offered support, maybe some of them were offered support, but maybe it was a case they just didn't want support, they just didn't want a baby.
But now we know from any of the research that is done into the reasons why women have abortions, shows that the majority of abortions are for socioeconomic reasons. Women feel pressure, either from finances, at the moment with the homeless situation.
The career, maybe they have a career.
Career pressure. Yeah. There's huge pressure on women now not to have a baby until everything is perfect in their life, and they can't be too young and they can't be too old and they need a stable position. There are huge pressures on women at the moment to not have a baby at the wrong time. And I think that we have to acknowledge that we don't, as a society, we're not encouraging women to have their babies. We're encouraging women to have the baby at the perfect time. I think we would like to see a society where we say, well, we will welcome every baby, protect every baby in law, support every mother.
But it is fair to say, Maeve, whether we like it or not, whether you believe in different family values to other people, and I'm sure you do, and maybe I do as well, and sometimes I'm a bit of conservative old fuddy-duddy, but in saying that, women are waiting longer to have children because they're putting their careers first. Not all women, but some women are putting their careers first. And rather than having a baby at sort of 18 to 24, which would have been the kind of thing to do 24, 30 years ago, whatever, now a lot of women are waiting till they're kind of closer to 30. And, you know, and there's also the affordability as well, because they have other priorities. They meet somebody, they have a mortgage. Mortgages are more expensive nowadays. And, you know, and just to afford a baby nowadays is quite expensive, because the woman generally has to put her life on hold for a little while and her career on hold.
Well, it's true that having a baby certainly will change your life. But I think what's not spoken about, and what we're in danger of doing again if we push these numbers under the carpet, like I think there's a big attempt to do today, and that very few media outlets have even reported on it beyond a cursory, you know, reporting the numbers once and leaving it at that. That if we brush under the carpet, we leave out the part that...
Yeah, but what are they meant to do? Our newsroom, in fairness, did run it on every news today, every news bulletin today, and the numbers, as you say rightly, it was just the numbers. But what are they supposed to say?
Human lives that were ended. We've been hearing the main news story every day for months about the lives that were lost to COVID-19. We've done everything we can to try to protect people from losing their life to COVID-19. And here today we have, for the first time, we've learned there are around 7,000 lives were ended in abortions. And there's almost nothing. There's the most cursory of coverage. And I think by doing that, by sweeping it under the carpet, we minimise the fact that abortion is a big decision. If a woman chooses to have an abortion, that has a really big impact on her as well. And for many women, they find an abortion really difficult to come to terms with. And that's even more so if we sweep it under the carpet and we pretend it doesn't happen. And we had one of the TDs in the Dáil in the last session, Lisa Chambers, talked about abortion regret being makey-uppy. But we know there are so many women who regret their abortions, who struggle afterwards. And it's much harder for those women to talk about it publicly because they're being told that they shouldn't regret their abortions. So they're being told, don't talk about it, let's pretend it doesn't happen. And that doesn't help women now.
It's not being told so much not to regret it. It's being told that there's no shame to it. And that's what they've tried to do over the last, you know, 10 years, is to take away the shame. And the people who are objecting to the idea of these numbers being publicised today or talking about it, is they're saying that we're continuing to try to shame women by releasing these figures very public. Like, for example, our news today wouldn't run a story and say, you know, 20 people had a lung transplant, or 10 people had a heart operation, or 70 people died of cancer. Or,
if this is something that abortion campaigners want to treat abortions as healthcare, we do report on procedures. We mightn't report on all of them every day. These are procedures that end lives. These are new procedures that are being done in our health service for the first time. These are procedures that we are all paying for with our taxes, that our society is facilitating the ending of life. And I don't think it's fair to say that it's just the same choice to end a life or to continue a pregnancy. And I think if you listen to what messages have been coming from government since repeal, there has been a really clear message. This government, the previous government and current government look like they're going to continue. They will help you have an abortion. They will roll out abortion access. They will roll out the red carpet for you if you want an abortion. I haven't heard them giving the same emphasis to saying, if you're struggling in pregnancy, we'll help you through that. We'll help you with that. We'll help you and your baby. You can do it. We can help. You won't have to choose between education and a child. We can help you do both. You won't have to lose your job. We'll support you if you're in a precarious job, if you're homeless, or if you're in a difficult housing situation. But we will help you with that. If you're suffering from
abortion... Yeah, but it's all well and good. But again, but Maeve, you know and I know, before COVID-19, with the homeless problem we had in this country and the, you know, temporary accommodation, it's all well and good telling somebody you'll help them, but it's putting it into action. And we can't. We don't seem to have the funds. We don't seem to have the wherewithal and the ability to provide housing for everybody who needs it.
But in what other situation do we offer ending a life as a choice?
As an alternative.
To avoid a housing situation that we can't handle. We don't say, well, we'll just, you know, you've got five people in your family and your house can only fit two. We'll just end the life of three of those people. We don't do that. We say, let's help you find a house that can manage a little bit better. Let's help you through this crisis. Let's get you to a more stable situation. There's no other situation where we turn around and say, we'll help you out of your poverty by ending the life of one of your children.
Okay, well, stay there for a second, Maeve, if you can. Keep texting. The number's 087-188-0008. We're talking about the figures that come out today. 6,666 abortions were carried out in the first year of legislation, up to January, I'm assuming, 2019. The legislation, of course, was brought in just after Christmas last year. And on top of that as well, you still had a number of women who went to the UK to have an abortion. Many of those women, maybe they just didn't want to tell anybody, so they went to the UK instead. So altogether, probably about 7,500 abortions in 1 year. And Maeve is saying, well, look, you know, 1,730 people lost their lives to COVID-19. It's all over the news. It's all over the papers. We locked down a country. Yet 7,000 babies, as far as she's concerned, lost their lives. And nobody's really talking about it. It gets a cursory mention. Andy, you're on Classic Hits. How you doing, Andy?
Good evening, now.
Andy, is she right? Should we be talking about this more? Should we be more concerned about this figure? And should we be supporting women so we could reduce that figure?
Yeah, well, I think I would ask the question of Maeve, does she offer the same support to women who've been through the abortion process that women that haven't been through it, you know, because that's what this is essentially about. Yeah, so
absolutely.
So good.
I think every woman deserves support in whatever situation she's in. So, and if a woman has had an abortion, and I know women who have come to me and told me about their abortion, I offer them support, I offer them a hug, I make sure, I ask them, have they talked about it with somebody? Do they need to talk to somebody about it? I ask them, are they doing okay? Would they like to talk about it?
There is no doubt, and nobody, I think very few people would debate the fact that going through an abortion is can be quite a difficult process for many people, you know, mothers and fathers alike. But really, you know, it's their choice to go through with it. It's not because they don't see any other choice. It's because they probably see that is the right choice for them and their circumstances. And there's a multitude of reasons why, you know, people do it. And as you touched on there about the perfect circumstance, unfortunately we live in a society where housing is incredibly expensive. And for any child to be able to afford their own place, it means they have to stay at home for longer. So, you know, people having children in their early 20s, you know, with the dream of sort of, you know, living in their own house is gone, you know, for many. It's absolutely gone. So there's a multitude of things. Now, back to the point about statistics. You know, what we say when we talk about statistics, there are 6,666 stories of, you know, real people that have gone through this process. And for, like we say, you know, many different reasons. What do we do? Yes, I think, to be fair, it is of current value and current news in terms of, you know, what was the take-up on abortion. But it shouldn't be used in a negative way, as if to say...
Why shouldn't it be? If Maeve is pro-life and many people are pro-life, actually 37% of those who voted, or 33% of those who voted would be pro-life. But that's only the people who voted, so let's say that 30 or 40% of the population are against... Well, surely they're entitled to view it in a negative way.
Well, because we've legalised...
But that doesn't mean people... Just because you legalise something doesn't change people's views on it.
But to morally take the high ground over somebody, you know, killing, you know, for a start, again, that whole issue of, you know, what constitutes a life and at what point does a fetus become a living, sentient being is something that's up for debate. But, you know, the fact that 1,000... Can I just say, and let me just, and I will, you know, let you respond, sure. Is that there's 1,700 people that, you know, have died from COVID-19 who have probably had families, who've worked, you know, who've lived lives, contributed to society, you know, have sort of, you know, social circles, etc., and are, you know, grieved over by the people that are left behind, you know, whereas when we talk about abortions, I hold a different view that there's not the same, you know, that life... As we're
has never
about.
Had any connections.
As I know.
Well, apart from the mother. Apart from the mother. Okay, well, Maeve, yeah, respond. I mean, you made a comparison with COVID-19, and some people would say that's an unfair comparison, Maeve, as Andy pointed out, because those people have lived a life, they have connections, they have mothers, fathers, brothers, sisters, family, friends, whereas an unborn child, the only person that it has any connection with is his mother and father, and really they've never met it.
Well, yeah, but to that point, and I think there are two parts to those of us who are pro-life. There are two aspects to it. One is the human rights aspect. Is there any point at which it should be okay to end an unborn human life? And I recognise that many of us will fall on different sides in that. The other aspect is the impact it has on women. And I think it's very unfair to say to a woman that her baby's life had no value because it was ended before it was born.
Nobody's saying no value.
Well, I think, to be fair, that is the point that Andy seems to be making, is that we shouldn't place a whole lot of value on a life before it's born.
No, what I've said, it's a very difficult decision for the vast majority of women that go through the process.
Well, then clarify the point that Maeve is making. Do you believe the value of an unborn child, or do you put less value on an unborn child than you do on a 65-year-old man or woman in hospital with COVID-19?
Of course I do.
So you put less value?
Yes, I do.
Okay, sorry, Maeve, continue to make the point.
And that's, I think that's fair enough, and I thank you for being honest, Andy, because that is what the legality of abortion comes down to, is whether, at what point we start to value human life. But the other side was the impact on women, and I think this is where, I'm not sure, Andy, how many women and men you've spoken to who've been involved in abortion, but when you speak to women and men who've had abortion...
But very often,
years later, and sometimes decades later, they will still tell you how old their child would have been. That child didn't just end, their life ended in the abortion, but they were still carried in that mother's heart and in their mind. They very often remember exactly when that happened. But there was a connection there. That baby had value to that mother, but in that moment, she wasn't supported in her circumstances. There are some women who choose, knowing all the facts, all the information, all the supports, they choose, they don't want to have that baby.
Would the laws facilitate
ending that life. But there are many women who want a baby, they want to continue their pregnancy, and that one person says they'll help them.
Would you agree that many women that end up getting abortions are there because their pregnancies are accidental?
Certainly that the majority of women who have abortions didn't intend to become pregnant. But should the circumstances of your conception determine whether you live or die?
Well, I mean, the vast majority of abortions in Ireland, 6,542 of the 6,666 that were carried out in this country were carried out in early pregnancy of less than 12 weeks, would lead me to believe that the majority of those were pregnancies that were, as they used to call it, an unwanted pregnancy.
Or accidental. I suppose there's no such thing as an accident, is there?
Well, no. Accidents are caused.
If you have unprotected sex, then, you know, it shouldn't be a surprise.
So for either economic reasons, for reasons maybe it wasn't the right time in a woman's life because of her career, or maybe they felt they were too young, because there are cases, obviously, I know more so in the UK, I don't know the exact age groups here because I don't think the age groups are listed.
We don't get any information here like that.
Yeah, okay, in the UK, for example, when the Irish women were going to the UK, at one stage, I remember reading there was 42 people under the age of 16.
We actually have less information now.
Yeah. So there is less information available now.
And I really, you know, what great interest is it to, I suppose it's a great interest to some, but, you know, the women that have been through this process have been through this. You know, when we talk about emotional problems and we talk about a healing process, you know, subsequent to that, then really, you know, statistics are real people, and how we use statistics are important to the people who are left around us. So, they're not there. They shouldn't be there for you to sort of go, oh my God, this is dreadful that so many women have done this.
I want to make a point as well, Andy, that, you know, we had, as I said, 3,200 people the year before legislation came in, went to the UK, or should I say 2016, but it was reported in 2018, went to the UK for terminations of pregnancy, right? So that's 3,200. We now have 6,666, plus the roughly, mm-hmm. we don't know exactly how many of those, the figures, I don't have the figures actually here. It said there was 2,135, so that would have been from Scotland, Northern Ireland or Ireland. Yeah. So I'm assuming maybe 500 to 1,000 of those would have been Irish women, right?
Yeah.
375 in 2019.
Okay. So the point is that we have almost, I suppose, we've gone over double the amount that we had mm-hmm. in 2000. So those who said during the referendum that it will not increase the amount of people that are going to have abortions were wrong. It just has, it. We've literally doubled
that opinion.
Well, I heard loads of people with that opinion. When they were saying, oh, the earth's not going to fall in, don't worry, the same, women don't make this decision lightly, so women are not going to suddenly decide to have an abortion just because it's legal. It clearly means that women did decide to have an abortion because it was legal, because twice the amount of women have had an abortion.
If it's simple, it's a simple process. If it's easier to access a service, you know, that means more, there's going to be a greater take-up in that service,
whatever
that service is.
But when any of these points were made before the referendum, we were told we were being ridiculous for saying that if abortion is legal, there will be more abortions. It's happened in every other country. If you look at Britain and the numbers of abortions that happened there, they increased by 5 times in just the first 5 or 6 years. And they're up to over 200,000 abortions now.
And one of the reasons why we
should have statistics, I believe, is that if we don't have statistics, how can we address the issues? Now, the statistics we have, they don't really tell us a whole lot other than the number. The statistics in Britain are actually much more comprehensive. They tell you the stage at which the pregnancy was terminated. They tell you and the method that was used to terminate it. They tell you the age of the women, mm-hmm. their ethnicity. They tell them whether they were married, whether they had other children, whether they had previous abortions. So they tell you information that you could actually use to build a public health policy and say, oh, in this minority group, actually we see a really high percentage of abortions. I wonder, are they suffering a lot? Socially, is there some problem there?
I think she's making a lot of sense. Andy, she's making a lot of sense when it comes to statistics. If we're not gathering statistics as to the backgrounds of the people who are having abortions, well, then we're not going to address
the British government, let me tell you.
Forget about the British government for the second. I'm talking about here in Ireland. We're not going to address a problem if we don't know who's doing it.
I doubt very much that the British government are doing a whole heap, you know, to put in healthcare policies to help those that are, you know, more likely to end up with abortions. Because, look, I mean, at the end of the day, let's face it, a lot of abortions are down for unprotected sex, and the question's got to be, really, what's wrong with our bloody education system that people don't seem to, you know, fully appreciate the fact that if they have intercourse without taking proper protection, you know, not only are they going to liable to sort of spread STDs, but also again, in unwanted pregnancy.
Well, look, women who have been taking the pill and men who have used condoms, sometimes, on rare occasions, condoms can burst and a pill can fail. So that can happen too. Very rarely, I know, but it does happen. But stay there, please, Andy, and maybe if you can, let me go to John as well. John, you're on Classic Kids. How you doing, John?
Yeah, listen, first of all, and I meant to say it to you previously, I want to thank you and Helena and the station there, because right up to the referendum and up to almost a few days before, you were the one true station that dealt with this more than anyone else. And you left people on both sides on, and sometimes they have strips off each other, right? And they get very heated. Or like some of the local stations here, one which I have taken myself off and had a massive row with the presenter, and I'll never be on again. And fair dues to you, and you're doing it again tonight. I guarantee you, the two local stations here on Cork or Loose Talk won't be talking about this tomorrow because it doesn't suit them.
Okay. Well, I'm glad you got that out of your system, I'm happy to allow everybody to have their opinion. But John, there are people online saying that these figures shouldn't be reported on because all we're trying to do is shame women who have had abortions. What do you say to that?
Well, I'll be putting that figure now on a placard, no, right? And I'll be front of the old Michael Martin. It was Sunday, the day he came home, and myself and another guy went down to his house, not actually outside his house, but the entrance, and the other lad had to go away and I stayed there. And it ended up with a fairly controversial poster. Ended up with 5 uniformed guards and 3 armed detectives for the deal with me. Now, it ended up car deal. I mean, there was no hassle, really. Like, I told them what I was about, and they listened. But somebody ratted me out because what I had on the poster, right? But I make no excuse for this. I will never stop fighting for the unborn. I took on the National Women's Council of Ireland, who were the biggest bunch of hypocrites here in Cork, a year ago, right? When they had a meeting, And I went in there, and they had feminism in Europe up on the board. They said, how dare you call yourself feminist? I said, when you use the National Women's Council of Ireland, back to abortion. I said, who stands for the female baby that's waiting to be born? If you're a feminist, I said, you won't do it, but I'll do it. Now, I listened to Andy there, and you see the trouble with Andy by his accent. I know, obviously, he's from across the water, right?
Well, he lives here.
Yeah, I know that. But the fact is that since 1973, since the Lord David Steele brought him the abortion over, he said later he never envisaged that would be used almost like a contraceptive tool, right? And you see, the people over there since 73, it's part of the culture, you know, it's embedded. And unfortunately, the same thing is happening here. Now, I was shocked today with the numbers. I knew this was possibly coming. I am totally depressed. I am sick to the pit of my stomach. I've got numerous calls today with people crying down the phone in a terrible state. They won't sleep tonight. They'll be going to the doctor tomorrow. I know one person, and I'm convinced of it. She got cancer over it. Another person.
What, because she stressed out so much over it?
Stressed out so much over the result, could not accept it possibly. Crying in a terrible state, got sick, and got very, very, very sick. And I know other people as well, they're totally depressed. They just can't get their act. They just, even in their families, they just can't seem to get their act together over what happened. They're so down and despondent over it. And to hear those figures today, and as regards the people, the government, that Maeve was right there. Like, I mean,
what do you say? Sorry, I'm going to come back to Maeve and Andy in a second. But what do you say to people who say these figures are only being published to shame people?
Well, listen, I watched the programme after it was finished with you last night about St. James's Hospital. And to see the way the teams there fought for a 97-year-old man and woman there, and the effort they put in, put them on ventilators and been trying to save the person's life. And at the other end of the scale, imagine, 6,666, imagine, children never got a chance to be born. Like, if the same amount of people had died from corona, there would be hell to pay.
Well, okay, Andy, we're coming back to that again, and I kind of knew this was going to be the... Well, Andy, in fairness, you know, if you're a believer in pro-life, it is the obvious argument that at one end of the hospital you have six nurses and doctors around a man 97 years of age trying to save him, and at the other end of the hospital you have a queue of women waiting to abort a child who, in their eyes, is a child.
You can't ventilate a fetus now, can you?
What?
That's the answer.
You can't what?
You can't ventilate a fetus.
No, that's a stupid argument, Andy, isn't it?
Well, it's not a stupid argument. You just said...
The fetus is not dying.
I was going to say you could allow the fetus just to continue to develop.
Well, are we talking about getting rid of the fetus, or are we talking about getting, you know, the life ending, or, you know, protecting a life? And it's what we just said. How do you value a life, and what way do you, let's say, want to say that? I don't believe.
Any limits on abortion, or would you feel that there is any point before birth for an unborn baby, an unborn human being, should have any rights at all, or would you support abortion all the way up to birth? Is there any point in...
I think it's really... I think that abortion is not something, a decision that people take lightly. I think that there's plenty of unwanted pregnancies.
Can you answer the question she asked you?
12 weeks.
12 weeks. So anything after that you would disagree with?
Well, I think...
And is there a reason why, apart from the legislation and the law and what they say, is there a reason why you believe 12 weeks is okay?
Okay, two reasons. One, because essentially if you don't want to go through the pregnancy, I think 12 weeks is enough time to make your mind up. And then after that, then you absolutely...
Hang on, John. Sorry, go ahead.
And then after that, then yes, I do believe, you know, the fetus is forming into, you know, an unborn child.
So you don't believe it's a child or a baby up to 12 weeks?
I wouldn't be calling it a baby up to 12 weeks, no.
Hang on, John.
I call it a fetus.
When do you call it a baby? Well, what stage would you call it a baby? Would you use the word baby?
Oh, God, do you know what, now? I'll have to go and sort of get my biology books out.
I find there's a lot of hypocrisy about this word baby sometimes, because the word baby is used if somebody wants it, but it's not a baby when somebody doesn't want it. Is that the way it works? Because I've often seen women get their first scan. When do you get a first scan? What's it, 14 weeks?
Right, 12 weeks.
12 weeks. And they'll put the scan up on Facebook, they'll show it to their friends, and they'll refer to it as their baby.
Of course it's a baby.
People are entitled to do that, aren't they? There's people put a lot more than that on Facebook, so...
I'm just saying, so is it only a baby if you want it, but it's not a baby if you don't want it? Is that the way it works?
Niall, you can call anything you want, depending on your opinion and on your circumstances.
No, I'm only asking you the question. I'm just asking the question.
I'm answering your question, which is people do whatever they feel is the right thing for them, which essentially
but
is
Andy,
what we're talking
about. Is there any point of human life? And I suppose this is where it comes back to the first part of it, the human rights question. I would hold that every human being, every human life, from the womb to the tomb, from conception to natural death, would have the right to live, to be allowed to live, and to have their life protected.
Fertilized egg.
Abortion is ableist, it's classist.
But Maeve, you know and I know that the Supreme Court decided that the unborn child has no rights.
The Supreme Court in Ireland?
Yes, this is before the abortion referendum, actually.
What I understood they decided was that there wasn't anywhere else outside of the Eighth Amendment where they had explicit rights that were explicitly mentioned. But I think from a human rights perspective, you know, we obviously recognise that at some point in the law,
human rights,
beyond 12 weeks,
Amnesty
there are
criticised so human babies have some abortion laws. After that. Didn't Amnesty International criticise Ireland and its abortion law?
Well, I think Amnesty International need to relinquish their human rights defender title when they abandon the most vulnerable human beings, because human beings who haven't been born yet, who are still in the womb, they can't stand up for themselves, and they've been abandoned.
I don't think a few cells you can class as a human being.
John, you want to say something there? Go ahead, John.
Just to touch on the Amnesty point.
Okay, I don't want people's names mentioned or your personal feelings on individuals involved in Amnesty International. You could talk about them as a group if you want to, I don't mind.
Yeah,
okay?
I had the sort of members of Amnesty, right? And the thing is, Amnesty International worldwide are against the death penalty and torture. Yes, members from that organisation here in this country openly, any chance they got on radio stations or on...
Yes, they advocated and promoted abortion.
And
promoted a yes vote, yes.
Freedom of choice for women.
They said it became a women's rights issue.
Andy, you just said there about rights for women. Getting back to the female unborn child again, what about her rights?
It's the right, it's by saying that the human being, the person that's walking and talking and breathing air, is the person that has the rights.
Okay, so the woman's rights, you believe, trumps the unborn child's rights. Okay, we'll stay there for a second. Stay there, please, all of you. Let me just go to Jude as well. Jude, you're on Classic Kids. Hold on, Jude, I'm going to switch you on there. Hang on. Sorry, Jude, go ahead.
Hello, Niall.
Jude, I mean, 6,666, it's a very ironic number, it really is today. But anyway, abortions carried out in this country, and some people are saying, well, particularly those who are pro-choice, that these figures shouldn't be published, that we're trying to shame women by publishing them.
I don't think so, and I agree with everything that gentleman there, Andy, said. Agree with everything he said, except for one thing. I think they should be published. Now, those 6,666, that was a number that was published. No one knows the names, addresses, or the identity of those women, so they're not being shamed. But I think it should be published because it highlighted the need for abortion, because these amount of women need that service. So it's
another promo
for abortion.
Well, I mean, it would be fair to say, Jude, that before we had abortion legislation, 3,200 people went to the UK in 2016, which is the last figure that I actually have here, which means that it seems that 3,200 people actually did need abortion, but the rest obviously didn't need it that badly.
But Niall, the word need is a very leading word to use.
Sorry, Jude, continue.
Abortion
was there. It's a facility that's there. No one's forcing a woman to have a baby.
Hang on, will you please let Jude speak? Sorry, go ahead, Jude.
You have an abortion. No one's forcing to have an abortion. But it highlighted that service was needed to be here because people had to travel. Obviously, as that lady was saying, before abortion was legalised in other countries, the figures were higher because there was loads of illegal abortions, say, over in Belgium or whatever, other parts of Europe. And no one is going to report the statistics on illegal abortions. Of course, the number is going to show up as it's legal.
Okay, so people would have been aborted. I know there are women who ordered the pills online illegally as well. That probably wouldn't have been counted. Yes, I would agree with you.
Yeah, can I just make the point as well, though, that the figures in Ireland are still very low compared to international figures of countries of a similar size to Ireland. So if we look at countries like Scotland, Norway and New Zealand, they all have a population kind of 4.5 million, similar to ours. And they have every year kind of 13,000 abortions. So the numbers in Ireland have been lower than other countries. We have at the moment, with the new figures show us, there's about 1 in every 10 pregnancies in Ireland ended in abortion in 2019. In Britain, it's gone from 1 in 5 to 1 in 4. So the numbers here have been low. So we were doing something differently to other countries. And I think that's where I would like us to look and see, but why were the numbers lower? And you know, can we agree that at least no woman should feel...
Why do you think the numbers are lower? Is Ireland different in the sense that maybe we do provide more support for single mothers or single women or women who want to have a career or housing? Or is Ireland better and maybe we morally are different? I mean, what's the reason why you think those figures
are low?
I said there's probably less unprotected sex.
Oh, less unprotected sex. Okay.
Well, I'm not sure whether that plays a role, but one of the reasons I think that was there was the fact that abortion wasn't legal here. So when a woman went to see her GP or went to a family planning centre, there was more of a chance that that person might help them to find other options or to help them through the pregnancy. The default wasn't, well, do you want to keep it or...
So do you think this figure of 6,666, this time next year, do you predict that will increase?
I think if we don't do anything to better support women in pregnancy and to address the actual issues that women have around pregnancy and being afraid of carrying on, then the numbers will increase, because that's what happens in other countries.
Okay, sorry, Jude, go ahead.
If a woman doesn't want to be pregnant, just want, she doesn't want to have anything inside her, she doesn't want to be pregnant, I can't abort the facility of abortion there to facilitate her and support her if she doesn't want to be pregnant for any other reason, just that, say she wants to keep her figure. Just, well, why can't the abortion there for her needs? No one else is forcing anyone else who wants to have a baby to have an abortion. The facility is there to help people who don't want to be pregnant. So to support people who don't want to be pregnant, that's what abortion is there for, to support them. Legally.
Well, I thank you for your honesty, but unfortunately that's not what was told to the Irish people before repeal. We were told this is for the hard cases, this is for the really, really tragic cases. Nobody would have an abortion because they want to keep their figure. Nobody would have an abortion because of a job. No way anybody would do that, Maeve. Don't be ridiculous. We were told abortion, if it was, it would be safe, legal and rare. We were fed a pack of lies.
I don't understand what it matters, what the reason is. If I don't want to be pregnant, no matter what reason, what does the reason matter? As long as the facility is there so they can have it legally and safely. What reason a woman wants to have an abortion? Remember, it's all about...
Ending a life can never be something as simple as a simple medical procedure. There is always more involved when you end the life of your child. And I'm not saying this to shame women. I think women understand that. They understand it's a big decision, and many women carry that with them. But
Jude, you're talking about a pregnancy like it's something, you know, like when you said they don't want to be pregnant. Being pregnant is not like, maybe, I don't know, you want larger breasts. It's not something you do for vanity. It's not something that you're meant to be able to change. It's a bodily function, so to speak.
Yeah, but you can
it's a maternal
that.
Function.
You don't want to be pregnant, you can
I mean, but it's not the same as some other physical attribute that you might be talking about getting removed because you don't like the look of it. You know, you're talking about whether you believe it's another human being or another life, or it certainly is a life anyway. There's no doubt about that, whether you believe it's just a group of cells that are alive or a baby that's alive.
It doesn't matter as much as others then.
Okay, but so this is what it comes down to, isn't it? Okay, so do you believe
that we're finally starting to have an honest debate.
Okay, so this is the same question I asked Andy. Well, the same question I asked Andy. So, you know, if your hen, as you call her, your wife, gosh, and I hope anything never like that ever happens to you. You don't have to ever make decisions like that in your life. But if she was 5 months pregnant and there you are at night and, you know, she's got a nice little bump and she's rubbing it and you're rubbing it and everything else and you're all very happy about it. Is that life inside her worth less than somebody who's lived for 60 or 70 years? Same question I ask Andy. Do you believe it's worth less?
It is, yes.
Do you?
Yes.
I find that intriguing. Considering you have a child, I find that intriguing.
Yes, and I love my child. And I want my child. My wife wanted to be pregnant. But if she wanted to get rid of the pregnancy, I wouldn't have stopped her. I wouldn't have anything got to do with it. I would have supported her. If she didn't want...
Even if you wanted the baby?
Yeah, but my wants don't come into it. She's the one.
Your wants don't come into it. Are you serious?
Well, I think that's quite hypocritical, though, that we say that men have no choice at all before pregnancy, but as soon as the baby is born, a man is responsible financially for that baby. But yes, they're totally out of the equation before pregnancy. I think a baby, when a baby is conceived, when a human life is conceived, a new human being is conceived, there is a new life there. And that child has a mother and a father, regardless of whether they're two cells or they're sucking their thumb in their 12-week scan, or whether they're kicking at 5 months, or whether they're actually born and out on the table, out on the delivery table. That is a child with a mother and a father.
I mean, if that's the case, Jude, let's just get rid of maintenance payments altogether, and fathers could just say, well, I didn't want the child.
I know, I do think if the child falls out...
Oh, once it's born, that's okay. That's different then, isn't it? Okay, all right, fair enough.
They don't have to be with the child, but they should support the child.
I just feel fine.
But it's a really slippery slope once we start deciding which human lives matter and which ones don't. And which mothers are we going to say as a society, which mothers will we help continue their pregnancies and support them in their parenting that baby, and which mothers will be helped to end their baby's life.
Okay, well, stay there for a second. Let me just go to June as well. June, you're on Classic Kids. How are you doing, June?
Yeah, I'm fine. First of all, I wanted to point out what you just said a few minutes ago about we don't know the true figures before the referendum. We don't know them because of the online purchases.
Mm-hmm.
So, and the other thing is, I am pro-choice.
Okay.
And I am quite, it's a woman's right to decide what to do with their own body. And I think if it's under 12 weeks, it starts out as an embryo. And if it's a fetus, well, then it hasn't even developed. And if a woman,
it's just a pistol.
Women fought hard to have rights to have that facility. And now you're trashing and trawling.
Maeve is a woman, by the way. Can I just point that out? And Maeve, I believe, is a great defender of women's rights.
I can't hear what you said.
I think Maeve is a great defender of women's rights, and she is a woman.
Yeah, but I'm a defender of women's rights, too, but I also believe in pro-choice. And we had a referendum. It's something called the democratic process.
Mm-hmm.
And we went through, Maeve, you said earlier that these facts weren't out for the vote. And that was not true. There was endless on all media channels.
If I could just clarify that to you, what I meant,
well, you look, you've had a lot.
We were told about the hard cases, and we were told to forget about all the other situations.
Look, you're That's manipulating what happened before it. And the other thing is that don't ride roughshod over my opinions, because you can't say that a fetus, an embryo, is more important than the woman who is carrying it. And there has been abortion. Can I finish what I was going to say, please?
Sure.
For millennia, women have sought ways of ending their pregnancies for various reasons. And we have a right to choose. When I was fertile, and if I had plans. If I ever got pregnant, I was headed straight to England because I never wanted a child. And yet you want to force it on people in every situation. You would like them to change their mind. Now, isn't that true?
I fully respect your opinion, and I actually think I think it's great that you're happy to articulate your opinion so clearly and to be honest about your opinion. And I think that's really refreshing. And I fully, as Niall said, I do support women's rights. But I think when, and I suppose, to be honest, the reason I got involved in pro-life advocacy was actually because I saw what was happening to women with abortion. And I saw that I hadn't realized what went on in an abortion. I didn't know anything about it. Nobody had told me. When I was younger... No, you possibly don't. When I was younger...
Let her finish, June.
Okay. If I had gotten pregnant in college when I was younger, I quite possibly would have had an abortion because nobody told me anything about what was involved. So one of the reasons I'm personally involved in pro-life advocacy is I feel women aren't being told the truth about abortion. They're not being told the truth about that, and they deserve that. But the other reason is that I believe that every human has the right to live, and that human rights from start to end. So I think there are two reasons. So to say that I need to respect your opinion and you might not respect mine, I fully respect your opinion. And I agree that in society there are differences. And at the moment, the Irish electorate has decided to remove all human rights from unborn babies before birth. So abortion is legal. I accept that. I recognise that. I'm not happy about that because I think it's incredibly sad that we've lost 7,000 babies' lives. But I also think it's incredibly sad that many of the women who do choose abortion talk about it afterwards and they say, well, you know, I just didn't know what to do and I didn't want to tell anybody and I was afraid I'd lose my job. I was afraid my parents would kick me out. My boyfriend said he'd leave me. I don't think that's women's choice if we're not actually investigating those reasons women have abortions and saying, well, what can we do to help?
This is old.
This is old. this conversation.
No, I do get it. We haven't really had the conversation since the referendum because we spoke about it so much at the time. We kind of got, you know, a bit of weight laid with the whole thing. So we decided tonight to talk about it because obviously this was in the news today. These figures were in the news today. And I mean, the main reason we decided to talk about it was the amount of people online, June, that were saying these figures shouldn't be published because publishing these figures in such a way very publicly in the newspaper, I think they're on most of the newspapers today, basically is still carrying or trying to push shame on women who've had abortions.
Well, I don't agree with that.
Mm. So you think? Do you think it's important that we see the figures and we know the figures?
But they should. They shouldn't be. You know, like you should be able to find them online on HSE or something. You know, I mean, what's the point of announcing it and then getting people all riled up about it when the answer is that we voted for it? And women are safe, and women have a right to choose. I believe that.
But it is one of the most controversial debates in my 20 years of being a talk show host. It is the one debate that is guaranteed always to end up in a row and has been for 20 years. It has never stopped. Actually, we took a break from it after the referendum, but it was always guaranteed to start a fight on the air.
So
it splits, it divides the nation because it comes down to morals, doesn't it? And different types of morals.
No,
by the way, June, I'm not suggesting you have bad morals. You just have different morals.
Yeah, well, you needed to reward that a little bit.
Well, I think you're right, Donal. It comes down to morals is one aspect. And, you know, we need to, as a society, we need to decide, you know, we make laws all the time based on what we think is morally acceptable or not. At the moment, the laws state that abortion is morally acceptable in the law. And there are those like myself who would like to change that. It wasn't morally acceptable in the law, so others changed that. That part of it will go over and back because it's in the politicians' hands now. But there are also human rights involved. You know, do we protect the life of an unborn human being at any point up to birth?
There are women's issues involved.
Are there women who are being forced into abortion?
Child.
Are we helping them?
I really believe what has been said before, that a woman who has lived her life and is an adult should be able to choose to have an abortion if she in her situation, because there are a multitude of situations, she should be able to access it safely and be able to have it.
Okay, well, do me a favor, stay there if you can, hang with us, Maeve. I'd really appreciate it. Jill, you're on Classic Hits. Go ahead, Jill.
Hi, Neil. How are you?
How you doing?
Hi.
Jill. Okay, Jill, you had a termination for medical reasons last year.
Yes, of August 2019. My baby had encephaly. It was basically the skull bones weren't forming.
Okay.
And the baby wouldn't live outside the womb.
I'm sorry to hear that. I'm very sorry to hear that.
So basically, I was told that on my 12-week scan, I was told to come back in 2 weeks' time, you know, just to clarify the reason, you know, clarify everything up that it's right. So I came back and I was passed, you know, to like a consultant.
Yep.
Another consultant passed me on to another consultant. They all had the same result in the end, that it was an encephaly. And basically I was sat down and I was told I had to terminate the pregnancy, which I didn't even like the word terminate. You know, because as I say, it wasn't my choice with medical reasons. You know, they were saying it's a very complex issue. Now,
was there a risk to your life as well?
It would have been, yeah.
Okay, so you would have been in the statistics, you would have been one of the 21 that were carried out under the legislation that the risk to health category.
I could have been,
yeah.
You know, I didn't kind of look into it that much. You know, I was just starting.
That must have been devastating for you at the time. Absolutely devastating.
It was. Yeah, I'd be honest with you. I was actually even afraid, like, that the night before. You know, you're given the medication and you're bought in, and, you know, they treat you with the greatest respect there, you know. Basically, they give you the medication to, you know, bring on the baby, and, you know, the next morning I delivered a baby boy, and, like, I was actually telling the nurse before, that night before, myself and my partner, we were telling the nurse like that we were afraid to look at the baby, you know, like, because, you know, like, with the skull not forming, you know, you're just thinking, what's the baby going to look like? Or, now, to be fair, when he came out, when the baby was delivered, he was beautiful. He'd nose, mouth, lips, you know, all his features, 10 fingers, 10 toes. For all the world, it was like a lump, kind of a liver hanging up, coming up top of his skull, which if that probably, if the baby probably got bigger, that liver could, you know, that lump of kind of liver, that's what it looked like.
Could have been a brain. Yes.
Broke and went into my bloodstream, which had caused me sepsis.
Okay, all right. So I know I do understand the reasons why, but it was a baby that you wanted, of course, at the time. It wasn't.
Oh, of course.
Yes,
yeah,
it wasn't the baby, of course. And I'm really sorry to hear that.
I was told from 12 weeks, like, this is, you know, like, this is not a possibility, but I was still persevering. I got to 23 weeks, and, you know, nausea then was kind of taking its toll on me, and, you know, the tiredness, and it was a case of, like, I was kind of rang about again, kind of about the 20 weeks coming, and I was like, no, I still go. And I got about 23 weeks, and I delivered him, because my body couldn't fight it, and, you know.
I understand, yes.
Yeah.
So, I'm very sorry, Jane, that it must have been very trying and a very tough time for you as well, you know.
Yeah, it was, we delivered a lovely baby boy, as they say, like, his little hat in his head, you wouldn't even recognise there was something wrong with it, you know.
I know. And when you hear the figures today, 6,666 abortions in Ireland, do you believe that it's necessary to publish those figures?
I don't really, because you don't know what people are going through in 9/11, like, you know, or some of the medical grounds, you know, like, and it's not right either for people to say, oh, you can do it. But, you know, like, it's up to the person. If you stand, like, if someone stood in my shoes back then, you know.
Well,
like,
well, there were, according to the figures, there were 21 people in your shoes, so to speak.
Yeah, well, I could have been the 21, yeah. So, you know.
Yeah, there were 21 people who had to have it done for medical reasons, for health reasons. Yeah. And, you know, there were many that didn't.
I was very cross, and I still am very cross, like, we were given no birth cert, like.
Right, okay.
You know, he was, you know, I do think the government would leave people down in them predicaments, you know, like, you have to.
Yeah, you should be given a birth cert if you want a birth certificate,
but
absolutely.
There was other criteria as well it came under, and the child had to be, the baby had to be 500 grams, whereas Alfie was weighing 350 grams. If he was weighing 500 grams, breathing or not breathing, I would have guessed it.
So they have a criteria of weight for a birth certificate.
I didn't know that. Yeah.
Hang on, sorry. Were you aware of that, Maeve, that there's a criteria for getting a birth certificate of weight?
I've heard some of those things before. And Jill, I just want to say I'm so sorry for what you went through. It sounds like it must have been such a difficult time for you.
It's good to talk about it, you know. I try not bottle it up. I try to keep active, you know. Like, I was just going to have to come in from his grave, but, you know, things like that, you know. But,
Mm-hmm. Yeah, no, I try to put
a brave face on it.
Yeah,
and I think it's so helpful to other women who, you know, hear you share that they're not the only woman who went through a diagnosis like that in pregnancy, because it can be terrifying. And if your health and your life is at risk, you know, I think there's nobody in the world who would say that if your health is at risk, your life is at risk, that we can't deliver that baby early. And I'm so sorry that you weren't, you know, able to get a birth certificate, or that you weren't able to have those things that you would have hoped for. But I'm so glad you got to meet your little baby, as you know, that you got to see your baby.
Do you know what, it was lovely when the nurse said congratulations. It was nice that he was acknowledged, and they treated the baby like, you know, they changed his clothes, little, you know, the knitted little capes they wear. She changed him every day. I was so nervous to change because he was so delicate with his skin, but, you know, they treated him, you know, like any other baby that, you know, in the hospital, and they changed him, they brought him out, she was talking to him, she was, you know, just the support they gave me was, like, really, really, like, you know, outstanding.
And how are you now, by the way? How do you feel about it now, Jill? Looking back now at that time in your life?
You know, I think this is only in August 2019. I'm still kind of like, did this really happen that way?
Mm-hmm. And have you had much support? Since
Felicom were very good now, to be fair. They, you know, gave us memory boxes, they give you candles, and they give you like a handprint, footprints, you know, and, you know, they meet up with you if you want to talk, and, you know, things like that. And that's like a...
That made it,
you know,
it made it a bit better, I suppose. It made things easier.
Yeah. And, you know, you meet people in that, the same category, and, you know, and everyone is there to kind of help each other, but... Sometimes I felt I was left go, like a bird, you know, free and kind of like, where do I go, you know, because I was so cocooned for the week up there, if you get what I'm saying.
I know,
my partner were, and like, he took it very bad as well. He took it worse than me up in the hospital, if you get what I'm saying, because at the end, I was kind of carrying it, and my body went through it, and I was kind of like shocked. You know, is this after happening, you know, that way? Because I also had a kind of previous death as well in the family, my father, so it was kind of like, it was my partner then was, you know, when he was holding the baby, it was kind of like, because he didn't, you know.
He was devastated, yeah.
Yes. Yeah.
Absolutely. Well, do me a favour, just stay there for a second, because Marion, you're on Classic Hits. How are you, Marion?
How are you?
Marion, you've been listening to Jill's situation. Now, Jill comes under the category of terminations that were carried out because of the risk to life or health. And obviously, in listening to Jill's story, there's nothing anybody can do about situations like that, unfortunately. It's just one of those facts of life that sometimes that can happen. But these figures of 6,666 abortions in Ireland and people giving out today saying they shouldn't be published, do you believe they should be published?
The question is, why should it be hidden?
Sorry?
Like, why should it be hidden as such? Because you've got to remember, abortion is funded by the taxpayer. Are we not entitled to know the statistics of what we're actually...
Well, there's many operations funded. Are funded by the taxpayer and we're not entitled to
And we
to
do
know.
Get stats of the various different... We get the waiting list, how many were treated, of various different ailments. Some that are on waiting lists for years. As I said, my daughter with scoliosis, we had to be shipped over to England to have necessary surgery.
Well, if it happened to me in 2018, I would have having to go to England... To carry, you know, they would have to carry
to deliver the baby early. Yes.
Yeah.
I mean, Marion, you know, see, this was always the problem. Can I just say, just to all of you, this was the problem when we had the referendum, because there are genuine cases, Marion, where people are in a very difficult situation. And a very difficult decision has to be made by both doctors and patient, and Jill would be the patient. And that decision is never made lightly. And the problem in Ireland at the time was we didn't have the clarity, Marion. Now, I think a lot of people maybe voted in earnest in that particular referendum to help people like Jill. But unfortunately, that did open the floodgates for a lot more. So, I mean, do you understand that there are genuine cases sometimes, Marion, that have to be dealt with?
And like, as we have Padraig Tobin, you remember March of last year, we had a couple whose child was misdiagnosed.
That's right,
and they were pressurised into an abortion. And it turned out there was nothing wrong with the child.
That was one case. I do remember that. Yes, sorry, Jill.
But that's one case.
I was kind of passed, you know, between two consultants.
That's right, yeah.
And my consultant did say that to me. This was a misdiagnosis up in Dublin. And the extreme lengths he went to make sure this was, you know, accurate.
I would hope after that happened in Dublin, I would hope that would never happen again. Because in fairness, I know, Marion, it did happen. I'm not denying it did happen. And it's probably happened in the past too. But I think they would be very cautious about this in the future.
I can only hear
one at a time. Sorry, Marion. Finish what you want to say.
Well, the fact is, it was actually an illegal abortion because it was an abortion at 15 weeks performed on a perfect child.
That's
on
right.
On those grounds. And nobody... has been held accountable.
But they didn't know at the time. They believed at the time that child was going to die.
It does pose questions how many
absolutely.
More have been down there. And it
absolutely.
Has happened in Britain. Getting
back to the figures, are you surprised at the figures?
I'm not surprised whatsoever, because that's the kind of mindset it creates, that children are actually disposable. It becomes the norm. But the question is, like, I fail to understand, like, there's so many of us on waiting.
I wouldn't agree there, because, like, when I was up in that ward, like, that ward treated, like, people with cancer in the womb, babies like me, like, you know, people, when they were medical reasons, I'd be honest with you, they didn't come in there, like, for care, you know, reasons, like... They didn't want to.
Well, maybe in the ward you were in, Jill, obviously for different reasons, but, you know, and there were 21 terminations carried out for that reason under the law, and that your baby obviously was delivered early. But in saying that, there were 6,542 other cases which weren't carried out for that reason. They were carried out for reasons for economic reasons. People just didn't want the baby. People wanted to have a career. They were healthy babies. They just didn't want them. So that there are different reasons. But sorry, you want to say something, Eve? Go ahead, sorry. Or Maeve.
There was a few things, but I was just going to say on that, I think in Jill's situation, and where she had that procedure in the hospital, and I'm not sure whether it was because of the condition of the fetus that the abortion was granted, or the risk of her life or health. I'm not sure about that part. But
I don't even like mentioning the word abortion. I say end prematurely, you know, that
yeah,
way.
Early delivery, I think, is more... I think that's a more appropriate term when you're when we are talking about somebody who wanted a baby, Maeve.
Yeah.
Well, yeah, and I think that, you know, that there are technicalities there in the background, and I don't think there's any helpful to anybody to go into that at the moment. But I was just going to make the point that that was in hospital, from what I understand from Jill.
That's right,
whereas the majority of abortions, they're performed, well, they're administered by the GP who gives the woman pills to take. And most of those women have those because you go through the abortion procedure themselves at home. So the majority of women who have abortions in this country, they actually had them at home. And that can be, for any woman who's gone through that, it can be quite a difficult experience to go through at home. Mm-hmm. So the majority of women don't end up in hospital who have terminations for various reasons.
Yeah.
Niall,
yes,
I just make it. Well, I know you're coming near an end, but like I often refer to, say, somebody like Sharon Osbourne, for example. She underwent an abortion at the age of 17, pressurised by her mother. We're always throwing this pro-choice and this ideology that women are choosing these abortions, but in reality, we're only fooling ourselves to think parents aren't pressurised.
I disagree completely.
Sharon Osbourne is one example of going public about women being pressurised into abortion.
But not all women are pressurised.
No.
Okay, one at a time. Sorry, Marion, just to put the point. It would be fair to say that, you know, but to suggest that all women are pressurised suggests that women are stupid and can't make their own decisions.
But I say we don't. It's just an ideology. Yeah.
Sorry, June, you want to say something? Sorry, go ahead.
Yeah, well, you implied that they were pressurised. Sharon Osbourne is a good age now. That was a long time ago.
But she was pressurised by her mother, and she's not unique there either.
How many times do you think that happens?
I mean, June has a point. I mean, Marion, that was a long time ago. Here in Ireland, for example, it was quite shameful to get pregnant out of wedlock a long time ago. And many young women would have been pressurised by their fathers or their mothers or the local parish priest to put their baby up for adoption because we didn't have the facility of abortion.
Can I get back on that?
Yeah.
Right, so you're saying about them, it's only when women in their 60s or 70s or in, say, the past 2 decades have been able to come out and say that. So that also poses the question, in about 40 years down the line, how many women in Ireland will be coming out saying, well, I done it because of my boyfriend, to accommodate him or a pressure I've been
at length. Okay, sorry, so, well, one at a time. Sorry, Jill, go ahead. You want to say something?
In years to come, 40 or 50 years down the line, who's going to come out and say, well, I done it because my parents pressurised me? All my friends told me. I've met women in those circumstances from Britain, even in cases of rape. Every corner they turned, there was people saying, no, have the abortion.
And you know, I'm not going to completely disagree. I think everybody knows my feelings at this stage.
I think generations have changed.
Yeah, I think generations have changed.
Yeah,
if I can ask you, sort of, Marion, in relation to, you know, the referendum itself, I hate to go back over old ground again.
Yeah.
But there are, I mean, we would be fools to deny, no matter how pro-life you happen to be, that there are genuine cases out there of women in turmoil, absolute and utter turmoil.
We're only fools. But we're only fools to believe that there are women not coming back from abortions that are not in turmoil.
Oh, absolutely. No, I agree with you. I understand.
That's been buried. Do you not think another 20 or 30 years down the line that the shoe could be on the other foot?
Yes, June, go ahead.
Yeah, to suggest that every unwanted pregnancy is encountering pressure from all directions.
It's
wrong.
I didn't say every, but we're only...
Yeah, but you are implying that...
I'm just saying
that
the fact
happens,
it does happen. It does
a
happen.
Lot of... Can I finish, please?
Trying to make out and saying something. I'm not.
But you keep talking about women who are pressurized into it.
Yeah, I'm just stating the fact that you'd be pressurized.
Yeah, but they're not, by a large
That's not
majority,
pro-choice.
They're not.
You don't know.
You're not.
Unless you're
the liar. Okay, one at a time. Sorry, it's difficult. I know. Maeve wants to say something to June in relation to that. Sorry, Maeve.
I just wanted to say that there are a number of studies that have been done in various countries, and studies have shown that up to 60 or 70% of women cited some form of pressure. You know, it might have sometimes been actual pressure from a parent or a partner, but sometimes it's much more subtle. It's the fear of what somebody else will think, their friends or their family or their employer, or they're afraid of housing or financial situations or being kicked out of their shared house. So pressure comes in lots of forms, and while I'm really thankful that in Ireland now we don't seem to have the pressure we had or the stigma that was there about being an unmarried
exactly.
mother. That seems to have gone.
There,
but what do you think?
Okay, hang on. Sorry, Jill, you want to say something? Sorry, go ahead, Jill.
No, I agree with what the girl is saying. I guess the pressure is kind of all people today, like, you know, in Ireland, you know.
There's no stigma to being pregnant if you're not married.
But I think there's a different pressure now. There's a different pressure now.
What's the different pressure now? The societal pressure, or you don't have a house, you don't have the money, you don't have the... Is that
I mean, I would say up until around 30, as a woman in Ireland, up until around 30, you have people telling you, don't get pregnant, you're far too young, don't do anything stupid. If you got pregnant, people say, what are you doing having a baby now? There's a certain point where women are told this isn't a good thing to do. So it's not necessarily...
Okay, just finally, you can respond to that, June, if you want. Sorry, go ahead.
Yeah, I mean, to imply that women are pressurized into pregnancies, into having abortions, is kind of setting the cat among the pigeons, because it's most of the time the woman has to make a choice, and she makes it for her own reasons.
I don't necessarily agree with you, June. I do believe there are a lot of the times, and I do believe the figures that Maeve has thrown out there, that up to maybe 60% of people, it might be unconscious pressure where the boyfriend maybe is not really into it, and she feels that maybe it's not that it's not her choice. It is always her choice at the end of the day, but she might lose her boyfriend if she has the baby, or she maybe doesn't have a house yet, or, you know, so there is a lot of unconscious pressure.
I understand. The other thing I wanted to say, and then I'll leave it, is that there are lots and lots of studies,
mm-hmm.
and it depends on who funded them.
Oh, I know. Absolutely no doubt about that. Okay, but listen, I have to wrap things up. Maeve, I appreciate you staying on the air so long, and thank you very much indeed, Marion. And Jill, thank you very much indeed for coming on the air, and I appreciate your honesty, and my condolences to you on the loss of your little baby, right? And I hope, I'm sorry to hear you didn't get a birth cert. I'm actually disgusted to hear that, by the way.
Yeah.
And there's nothing you can do about that, no?
No, not that I'm aware of.
So the state doesn't recognise, the state, and I'm sorry to bring it back to you, and I hope I'm not upsetting you by asking you. The state doesn't recognise your baby unless your baby is 500 grams.
Yeah.
Which is only half a kilo, yeah.
Whereas I was aware of the last year, anyway, 2019, they don't recognise, you know, and if you can't get a birth cert, you can't get a death cert. And then you kind of, you know, when you go to the graveyard, like I put the baby in a family grave, you don't get like a register, you know, it's not on the register, kind of, but...
Yeah.
If you get what I'm saying, but...
That's horrible. I find that horrible. I'm absolutely flabbergasted. I find that horrible.
Yeah.
Weight comes into it.
Yeah, exactly.
I mean, you carry that baby for over 20 weeks.
Yeah.
You know?
10 fingers, 10 toes, features, and, you know...
I mean, I understand some mothers might want a birth cert. That's fine. And that's their choice. Yeah. But if you want one and you're recognising that as your little baby, you should be entitled to a birth certificate.
To be fair, the hospital did go the extra mile to me, and they baptised him, and they gave me, like, you know, a baptismal kind of cert.
You
know what I'm saying? But that was from them. But as I say, it's not kind of like government.
What was his name?
Alfie.
Okay.
Yeah.
And how old would Alfie have been now?
Alfie would have been due at Christmas. So what month are we in now? We're in June now.
Yeah.
Alfie would be 6 months now.
Okay, it's still very raw for you, and still very fresh in your mind.
Look,
my condolences to you and your partner, and I'm very sorry for the both of you and your family as well, and I'm sure it was a baby that was much loved and much wanted.
Well, I do go to the medium, and, you know, like, I buried my father as well in April, so I know, like, he's with my dad, and, you know, it kind of gives you a bit of comfort.
Well, if that gives you comfort, that's all that matters. All right, listen, thanks very much, Jill. I appreciate it.
Thanks a million.
Bye. All right, now, after the break, let's lighten the mood a little bit. And loads of people, by the way, texting in, by the way, in relation to Alfie there. Somebody said, it's disgraceful that they wouldn't give the woman a birth cert. That's absolutely criminal. It is. I'm going to have to look into that more. I'm going to have to find out about that, because I genuinely didn't know that. Niall, I had a baby boy in 2015. We had him for 29 minutes. Well, I am delighted that you had him for 29 minutes, and congratulations on the birth of your baby, but my commiserations and condolences on the fact that obviously you lost your little baby. So I'm sorry to hear that, but I am delighted you had 29 minutes with him, and I'm sure it's 29 minutes you'll treasure for the rest of your life. They should. They don't think about women who miscarried. My girl had to in a year. Another person says, Niall, no figures should be reported This is the funniest text we got all night, by the way. No figures should be reported. Dentists aren't required to mention figures about how many teeth they've removed from people's mouths. So what's the difference with something growing in your womb? So now you're comparing a tooth to a baby. Right. Interesting theory. Why record it? Count one extraction and not the other. The mind boggles. So you're comparing removing a tooth to having an abortion. I can clearly see the type of person you are. Thanks very much indeed, miss. I won't even bother mentioning your name and give you any opportunity to talk about me. But you're comparing a tooth to a baby. Or even a fetus, if you want to refer to it as fetus. Disgusting. There's no, absolutely no words to describe that text.
Real people, real opinions, real talk radio. The multi-award-winning Niall Boylan Show. Classic hits.